Salutations, folks. Another episode of Vinnie Cornrow's Courtside coming your way. Derek Schultz, our esteemed guest this week. I'm Piers Kavanaugh. Derek, thanks for coming on. It's a bit of a somber occasion after the Pacers dropping their first game of the year to the Bulls. I guess all good things have to come to an end, but I was hoping that it wouldn't be as ugly as it was last night.
Yeah, Piers, you know, nothing to be somber about, really. It's a long, long season. We're going to be talking about regular season basketball all the way through winter until you're scraping your windshield, and then you're not scraping your windshield anymore, and then flowers are blooming and the birds are coming out. So, you know, even great NBA teams lose 20 games over the course of the year, and you have off nights, and that's exactly what happened. Maybe the Pacers were due for a performance like that. Maybe we should have seen it coming. A second game of a back-to-back, it's a tough road trip. Chicago obviously wanted to make a statement after getting beaten by the Pacers a couple of weeks ago. And it was just kind of the perfect storm. Chicago always brings it defensively, but for them to play that well offensively, man, they're going to be really tough to beat if they're able to hit shots like they were in that game. Derrick Rose had, I haven't seen him play every game this season, but I've watched him quite a bit, and had to have been his best performance since coming back from the ACL surgery. Kirk Heinrich had a nice game. Carlos Boozer had a nice game. They got contributions from their bench, which was mixed in Indianapolis a couple of weeks ago in that game that they lost. So you just kind of move on from it. You chalk it up to a bad night, and you hope that it doesn't start a trend. But to be honest with you, I'm kind of relieved that the streak is over, because I'm tired of talking about it. In the NFL, if you start 9-0, that's a streak worth talking about, because we're only talking about 16 games. In college basketball, and college football, I guess I should say, staying unbeaten is really important. In the NBA, it's not important at all. The Pacers built some distance between themselves and everybody else, while Miami and New York and Brooklyn and Chicago all struggled out of the game. And it's important in that sense. But going undefeated and winning the first 10 games, or going 15-0 and setting NBA records, I don't care about any of that. The only thing that I care about is the Pacers getting home court advantage, playing for that number one seed, and trying to win a championship for the first time in their NBA history.
I want to put this in perspective, because it might sound like I'm coming to you from some remote Al-Qaeda location. I'm on the bus, for listeners too, on the way back from Chicago. I've been doing play-by-play for the Indiana volleyball team this year, and we spent the weekend in Chicago. There's a guy on staff, two of them actually, who are Bulls fans, one more than the other, and we were watching the game together. We were all excited because, you know, Pacers, Bulls, they won the first game, and here's the second one where the Bulls have a chance to punch back. In hindsight, should not have been so excited, because the Bulls looked really pissed that they played as poorly as they did in the fourth quarter against the Pacers, and really from the halfway point of the first quarter made it clear that this was not going to be Indiana's night. How quickly did you get the feeling that it was just not going to be a pleasant experience?
I think there's some of that to it, but ultimately, it's just life in the NBA. The Bulls are a good team. That's no secret. If they would have gone to Charlotte and had a performance like they did, or if they would have gone to Utah and had a performance like they did, then I would have been a little more panicky than that. But really, I'm not very much focused on the Chicago game. I think it was one night out of 6, 7, 8 bad nights that the Pacers are going to have this year. But it's just what happens in NBA teams. Miami lost to Boston at the buzzer. They lost to Philadelphia as well. The Knicks are 3-5. Brooklyn has a losing record, and they really struggled to get things together. But all in all, to be sitting at 9-1, Frank Vogel said in the postgame, he feels pretty good about where they're at. I mean, he'd like to win that other game against Chicago, because you don't play them again until March, and all of those wins are important for tiebreaker scenarios should it come to that for the Central Division. But ultimately, I expected the Bulls to be PO'd, if you will. I expected them to play hard, and they did. They punched the Pacers right in the mouth, and that was a game that really Indiana was never in. It was a game that really was over at the midpoint of the second quarter. That's about as close as it ever was, and then the final score actually doesn't indicate just how one-sided that matchup was, because mostly by the end, the Pacers had emptied their bench and were lucky to get it to within 14, 16 points, because really that was a 25-30-point game.
And Chris Copeland got in midway through the third quarter, so that really indicates how much the game had turned to the Bulls.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, too. And I was glad to see him get a little bit of spin. He's been working really hard, And he's a nice kid. He has a great backstory. You know, a guy that's 29, 30 years old and finally got in the NBA and stuck last year and had a really great season with the Knicks and parlayed that into a multi-million-dollar contract. And he's kind of right now a square peg in a round hole for the Pacers, which is unfortunate because it's no fault of his own. It just kind of ended up that way. The Pacers signed him, I think, initially believing that he was going to be their stretch four and a guy that was going to be a big part of their second unit. And then when they were able to swing the trade for Luis Scola, he got put on the back burner. And is at the point now where you're lucky if you see him 3 minutes a night, 4 minutes a night. I mean, he's had more BMP coaches' decisions than he's actually had minutes, I think, on the floor so far this year outside of that Chicago game the other night. And I think he can play. We can talk and say what we want about him defensively, but he's a great scorer. He's a fantastic shooter and really can stretch the floor. And I believe the Pacers have enough great defenders that you don't need everybody to play elite-level defense in order to make it go. If Chris Copeland's paying 5 minutes a night for you, and he provides some offensive pop, yeah, he might give up a basket or two, but I think that he could really make that up. And the Pacers could have really used a guy like that last year or 2 years ago on the bench, somebody that could provide some instant offense. So even though he's one-dimensional and even though he has a long way to go, I don't know why the Pacers, if they're going to pay him $6 million, why they can't find 5 minutes a night for him somewhere in that rotation, whether it comes from Solomon Hill's minutes or you give Skull a little bit more of a breather. You know, I don't know what you do, but I think you try to find a way to get him involved with this team because he can make an impact. He really could.
And we've got Derek Schultz on the show. Derek, I've sort of buried the lead with you. You're the co-host of Quarian Schultz in the Indianapolis market, 1260 NDE. I believe you're starting, is it your second or your third year, I guess, sort of the full cycle on the air? I can't remember.
This is technically the third year.
Okay, technically the third year. Is this the first year where you can remember? I don't want to like lead you with a question because I think the answer is yes. But how does this compare? I'll word it differently. How does this Pacers season and the buzz around it compare to the other two where you've spent on the air? Because it just seems like this is a totally different animal, even in an Indianapolis market that still, it seems, is struggling a little bit to embrace the Pacers fully.
Yeah, well, my history actually goes even a little bit farther than that. I was at a smaller station that was originally the ESPN affiliate before 1070 and MS took it over. And I've had a daily show, meaning weekdays, in some capacity since January of 2008. So really, I was on air during the worst of the worst era for the Pacers. I mean, I was going to games when, on a Monday night in January, they were drawing, you know, 4,500 fans to make us life too loud. So for them to come full circle, I think it's been really neat to see. This is the first time this fall, and maybe it's because of the streak, that the Pacers have been an every game lead show topic. Whereas in the past, even when they were successful, let's say last year, when they played the Bulls, we'd meet with that the next day. When they played Miami, we'd meet with that the next day. Even the Knicks, we'd meet with that the next day. But really, until cold season ended, we went close because that's what people wanted to talk about it. And people didn't start paying attention. If they started paying attention at all to the Pacers, it was in mid to late January when the Colts were already eliminated from the playoffs. So to see it come full circle and to see people get back on board, I think it's been great. Also, you see more butts in the seats. The Chicago game that we've been talking about in Indy from 2 weeks ago was the best regular season crowd that I think I've ever seen, where at least since the Reggie era. And I was an intern with WIBC during the Reggie era, so I went to some of those home games, and they used to sell out all the Friday and Saturday night games. Out of that place, and it reminded me of that atmosphere. All this was pre-brawl, obviously, and it's been cool to see people get excited about this team. And I think it's long overdue because this has been a fun team to watch now for the better part of the last two plus seasons. So now that they're winning and now that they're considered a true title contender, I think that more excited because as good as they were the last 2 years, I think a lot of people looked at them and said, yeah, well, they don't really have a shot at winning a championship, so I don't want to jump in head first into the defense. Everybody's diving into the pool now. Everybody wants to be a part of it.
I had a good conversation with Mark Boyle a couple weeks ago. He came on the show right before the beginning of the regular season, and he basically said that he felt that this was a make or break season for the Indianapolis market, because as good as this team is, the attendance has got to reflect that, even night in and night out, even during those Monday and Wednesday games, for one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NBA. That's a conversation we could have a little later. I'm curious as to your thoughts, even in an Indianapolis market with the Colts and IU basketball, a lot of tradition there, just other things that people have spent their money on in recent years. What do you think needs to be a number that the Pacers hit on a nightly basis in order to see this as a successful attendance year?
I shoot for 95% capacity, because I think that's about, that puts you among the top 10, if not even higher than that, in the NBA. The actual attendance numbers figure is going to be low, because I believe they can't get any higher than 13, even if they sell out every night for average attendance, because the capacity pales in comparison to Madison Square Garden, United Center, and some of these big behemoth arenas around the league. So it's important to look at capacity full. And I don't have the figures in front of me, but I believe last year they were 25th in overall attendance, but they were still 19th in capacity full. And that needs to be bumped up. I mean, they were drawing less fans, even capacity-wise, than Cleveland at points last year. I believe Toronto was ahead of them, too. And I'd be surprised if it stays that way this year. Indianapolis is a bit of a fickle market, and I don't necessarily mean that in a negative way. I think that's the way with a lot of different markets. But one thing that they do here is that they support winners. It's not like Atlanta. It's not like a market where you get a lot of success and you have a lot of playoff bursts and things like that, and then suddenly fans get bored with it and they don't go anymore. That's what we've seen there with the Braves and the Hawks and some of their other teams. That doesn't happen here. If you're good, the fans will come out and support you. Now, if you're bad, they won't do that. But now that the Pacers are good, and now that they're legitimate title contenders, and now that the excuses have run out of why you won't go, because they don't have a star, or because they're not a legitimate title contender, or they're not good guys on the off the court, all that stuff is thrown out the window now, because they have a star in Paul George. Obviously, they're a legitimate title contender. And these guys are good guys both on and off the court with what they do in the community. So it's a team that this city can be proud to represent them.
All right, we're going to take a quick break because I'm still on a bus and there's no internet connection. So behind the curtain, folks, we'll be back with some more Derek Schultz shortly after this. You're listening to Indy Cornrows Courtside on IndyCornrows.com. We're back, folks, in much more forgiving broadcasting settings. Derek Schultz is hopefully permanently on the line now as we try to finish this thing out. Where we just were, Derek, you're talking about Pacers being a team Indy can now be proud to have represent them. I wanted to draw the comparison to the 2003 Colts team that started the year, and a lot of people might not remember this. They were getting games blacked out early in the season and didn't really get a solid foothold until the year after when Peyton started throwing all those touchdowns. I feel like this could be a breakthrough year for them like that, because the Colts weren't always the tough ticket they are now.
Yeah, I think that's a okay comparison. You know, that kind of harkens back to the point that Indy is kind of a fickle market and they don't support you unless you win. I mean, the 0-3 Colts are a great example of that. It took six games, I think, into that season before they sold out their first home game. And then, of course, they went to the AFC Championship game, and then it was, you know, smooth sailing and the bandwagon was overflowing for the next couple of years. I'll say that I feel like last year was more that year because they came so much closer last year. 2 years ago, it was almost like, well, they got to the Eastern Conference semifinals and they were up 2-1, but then Miami kind of flipped on the switch and then realized they were Miami and the Pacers were the Pacers, and then they were clearly the better team. I don't know if you got out of last year and that series against Miami thinking that the Heat were clearly the better team, as much as they just clearly had the best player and they had home court advantage. I think really that those were the two things that separated Miami from Indiana last year were LeBron James, which is, don't get me wrong, a pretty big separation, but just it's one guy.
The one that's still
and
there.
The fact that they had game seven in Miami. Because going back home, once things snowballed for the Pacers in that game, I mean, it was over midway through the second quarter. But as far as, you know, fan response to this team, winning still trumps everything. We can talk all we want about good guys and things like that, but nobody was going to see Mike Dunleavy and Troy Murphy and Travis Diener, who are three really good guys. You have to win along with that. And the Pacers not only are doing the right things off the court and keeping their nose clean now, they're also winning. And that is the ultimate trump card.
Yeah, Derek, I was worried about the what last excuse that people might have before the emergence of a certain player who I will name in a second here, but you talked about the excuses that fans have used, and the last one was there's not a superstar to root for. And even with Reggie Miller, there wasn't really a superstar to root for. Paul George is all of a sudden looking a lot more like that guy. He's getting a lot of national buzz. NBA bloggers are in love with the dude. I don't think there's been a more exciting player. And Reggie was one thing, but as a guy who could do everything, defend, play offense, highlight real dunks, Paul George is basically the whole package, and it younger than 25 years old.
Well, to put it in perspective, Paul George Pierce was a third-team All-NBA selection last year in his third year, and Reggie only made the All-NBA team, I think, three times, and all three times it was on the third team. So Paul George technically has already reached whatever individual goals that Reggie Miller had during his career, even though I think it's unfair to just judge Miller based on five All-Star appearances and three All-NBA teams, because he was so much more than that. He played in an era when there were a lot of great players at his position, and he just kind of got left out. I think the thing about Reggie that I'm not going to use the word overrates him here, because he was a great player, and he's not overrated here. Everything that people say about him is true, about what he meant to the franchise and what he means to the city. But he was such a showman, and his big moments came at such big times. It wasn't about regular season stats or all-star games or anything like that. It was about on the biggest stage he performed, and he wore Indiana on his chest. He was all about the little guy and carrying the flag for all of the Hoosiers here in this state. And Paul George is still going to have the opportunity to do that, because I'm assuming that the Pacers are going to be really successful for a long time now and continually go to the playoffs, and he can perform on that big stage. And then once he does, I think that's when people will move on to the next person. But as far as his skills and where he is right now in his career at his age, I've heard Mark Boyle say this, who's covered the Pacers for 30 years. I've heard Mark Monteith say this as well. He's already a better all-around player than Reggie Miller ever was. I mean, Reggie was a scorer, and he did that really well, but that's what he did. That's really it. He was barely an adequate defender. He did get good effort on that side. He was a mediocre rebounder and a mediocre facilitator. And Paul George already is an elite-level defender. The first 10 games this year, he's been an elite-level scorer. We've seen him pop up that way. And as far as facilitating and rebounding, things like that, he's already at or above where Reggie Miller was in the prime of his career. So it's tough to compare guys just on paper, because it's more than that. It's what they meant to a team. And maybe Paul George never means to the Pacers or means to Pacers fans what Reggie Miller did, but it is exciting to finally now, what are we, 10 years later since Reggie Miller gave his last hurrah here, we can move on to the next guy in this town.
And that's why it's shocking, too, because as quickly as it's come, I don't think a lot of people expected that. You look at George, even last year, he was turning the ball over at an alarming rate. His entire regular season, he shot less than 43% from the floor. He was an all right three-point shooter. His free throw percentage took a step down, and it just looked like he was being forced into a bigger role than he was ready for. He had some good moments, but he had a lot of shaky ones too, and he's just looked like a totally different player. I don't know if I can remember a turnaround as abrupt as this for an Indiana player, certainly.
No, in the last 12 months, he's done a complete 180. And I remember vividly having a conversation with Jay Query, my co-host. They lost, I want to say, Golden State.
And yeah, it was that Golden
right
State
after
game.
Thanksgiving. Yeah, it was maybe late November, early December last year. The Pacers were like 8-9, and he went scoreless. He shot like 0-8 from the field or something like that. And remember, he was a total, you know, to be blunt, he was a dumpster fire in the 2012 playoffs. He was awful. He didn't do anything positive or contribute anything to that series in the Eastern Conference semifinals and that loss to Miami. Yeah. And coupled with the slow first month last year, I was telling Query, man, he's just a guy. He's an okay athlete. And you know, maybe he'll be a number two or a number three, but I felt the same way about him as I did maybe like a Danny Granger. I thought maybe Granger would be his ceiling, a guy that potentially could be an all-star, but maybe it'd just be a one-off, and that would be it. And now he's transformed himself into, I think you'd go outside of Indianapolis, people that cover the game, and most people would tell you that he's a top 10 guy. I mean, really, how many guys definitively are you taking over Paul George right now? I mean, LeBron James, I think still definitively you take over Paul George. Kevin Durant, definitively you take over Paul George. But then there's a whole list of guys that I could really kind of argue either way. Derrick Rose coming off the injury. Where do you put Russell Westbrook in the equation? Steph Curry, Chris Paul. You know, and the list goes on and on and on. I think George is right there with those guys. And if you just take into account the All-NBA status from last year being on the third team, that already puts him in the top 15 just by eliminating those guys there. So it is amazing to see how far he's come. But I think, Pierce, what you have to remember is that he's, what, now 23 years old? We can't use the same grading scale that we used to use. You know, I was born, I'm not that much older than you, but I was born in 83. But when I grew up, you had guys like Shaq, and you had guys, I mean, even when I was a little kid, like Ewing and Olajuwon David Robinson came in the league and dominated right away, and that's what you expected them to do. There was no growth period. If you were a top-10 NBA pick and you were worth your salt, by year two, you were a borderline all-star player already. And it's just not the same scale now. You draft guys hoping that in 3 or 4 years – they're going to be really good players, and then you can control them on that second contract. And from the end of year two and the very beginning of year three to the end of year three, forget Indiana, I haven't seen anybody really that I can think of in recent memory make the sort of leap that he has in this league. It's unbelievable. It's been great to watch.
The one that Durant made, I think, was the closest, because even his – I was about to say freshman year, his rookie year out in Seattle, he was a 20-point-per-game scorer, didn't shoot the three that well. His first year in OKC, he really blossomed. But outside of those two guys, you're right, I can't think of anyone off the top. I want to actually bring up another guy who's made a similar leap this season, at a lesser degree, of course. Lance Stephenson, though. Born Ready, as we refer to him on the show. Derek, number one, I'm trying to never call him Lance Stephenson because I just want to call him Born Ready. But B, he's been actually really impressive. I was in the house the other night when he put up the triple-double against Memphis, and he's just playing like a totally different player. I feel like he could be a star and really seems like the perfect complement to Paul George.
Well, it's kind of like George. George went from, I think, 8 points, I don't have it in front of me, but I think he went from 8 his rookie year to 12 to 16, and now is at, or 16 or 17, and now is at 22 or 23. And it's kind of the same scale with Lance. I mean, talk about dumpster fires in the 2012 playoffs. Lance Stephenson scored 6 points in the 2012 playoffs. Scored 6 points. And 5 of those came in one game against Orlando. He was benched for flashing the choke sign. And I remember thinking to myself, I was at that game, I think it was game 4 against Miami, where they mounted that big second half comeback and really swung the whole series. And I remember thinking, you know what, this kid is such a clown, and he is never going to be anything. And Bird has been way too patient with him, and the Pacers should just kind of move on from Lance Stephenson. And this is the end of year 2, which is really unfair of me to do. The talent's always been there. It's just been a question of where is his head at. And clearly his head right now is in a good place, and he's blossoming. I think the Granger injury or the Granger injury status, you don't want to say that it was a good thing for the Pacers, but would we see Lance break out the way that he has without that Granger injury? I thought it was foolish. You know, I'm admitting all the things that I've been wrong about on this phone call to you in the last 2 years, but one thing that I felt like I was right about was Stephenson should have been the starter anyway going into the season, because Granger had missed so much time already, and he really came of age in the playoffs last year, and I thought that he was the better option, and he's proving to be the better option, because even Danny at full health, I don't think he can give you, at least from an all-around standpoint, what Stephenson can give you. Certainly not the defender that Stephenson is. And the Pacers are on a different level when he plays this well, because you know exactly what you're going to get from Paul George. You know exactly what you're going to get from David West. You know what you're going to get from George Hill when he's healthy. And you know what you're going to get from Roy Hibbert. The only real wild card on the Pacers, besides the bench, I guess you could also put the bench in there, but individually, the only other wild card on the Pacers is Lance Stephenson. He's the guy that you don't know what you're going to get from. So when he's good, and I say good Lance, the Patriots are nearly unbeatable. When he's bad, he's still really bad. But we've only really seen bad Lance in the first half of, I think it was the Chicago game, where he shot like 0 of 8 or something like that, but he came out in the second half and was terrific. And outside of that, I mean, he's been great.
Yeah, that's the other thing, but that bad Lance, even when he comes out, it's sort of like watching a first grader play basketball, and even when he makes mistakes, you can't help but laugh at it. Like when he went 1-on-3, when he has the penchant to go 1-on-3 and take contested 20-foot transition jumpers, even though that's not really his game to begin with. They're just things that you can't. Okay, maybe this is just me. I've never been able to get mad at Lance Stephenson because it's just so doggone entertaining to watch. I don't know if anyone else feels that way, but he seems like one of those guys who's just gonna do him, and whatever's gonna come of that is going to. And he's just been so much better that it's been so acceptable.
Yeah, you live with it. You live with it because he's the fat DH that'll strike out 180 times, but he'll hit 40 home runs. And you live with the fact that some nights he's going to go 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, and some nights he's going to hit 2 bombs and drive in 6 runs. And that's just kind of who he is. I'm assuming that's kind of who he's going to be for his entire career. I don't necessarily view him as a guy that's going to be a perennial all-star or anything like that, but I think he's a really big piece with what the Pacers want to do and potentially could be their third go-to guy behind George and West as their 1-2. And Lance providing something offensively, Pierce, takes a lot of pressure off of Roy Hibbert, because Hibbert's a guy that, you know, really is kind of hit and miss offensively. He's still a very average offensive player. So if he just focuses on defense, you can get 5 or 6 points from Roy Hibbert and get 14 or 15 from Lance and feel really good about yourself. I mean, it's no coincidence that the Pacers' offensive numbers have taken such a jump this season from last year when you look at how well Lance has been playing.
My big question, I look at the difference between how the Pacers have played against bad teams and against good teams. I want to run through a couple games with you. New Orleans, I'm going to count as a good team. You feel free to disagree with me on some of these. I think the New Orleans Pelicans are good. I think Detroit eventually is going to be good. They seem like a team that should give Indiana some trouble. Chicago, I think, is good. Brooklyn's good. And the Bulls, again, having played them on Saturday, having suffered a loss there. Right now they're 4-1 against good teams. Maybe you throw Memphis in there, maybe you don't. And they've just looked...
I'd put Memphis for sure ahead of Detroit and New Orleans.
You think so?
If you want to count them.
Okay, all right, okay. I guess that's fair. I don't want to be unjust towards the Memphis Grizzlies. I just wasn't as impressed with them as I thought I'd be. Memphis seems to have taken a step back. I want to get to them in a second, actually. But just how you've seen the Pacers play against good teams, it seems like they're gelling earlier than a lot of these other groups, which is surprising to me because of how many bench guys they brought in and the role that guys like C.J. Watson and Luis Scola have been playing with the rest of this group.
Yeah, but it's just bench guys. The 5 starters know exactly how to play together. Lance, Paul, Roy Hibbert, David West and George Hill have been together for years now. And you look at the other teams, let's just go with some of the teams that you mentioned there. New Orleans, you know, Jrue Holiday, they just got in the offseason. He's a big piece. Eric Gordon's back in the lineup. He's a piece. You've got a young player in Anthony Davis that's in his second year. You go through to Brooklyn. They've got Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett that they're trying to implement in that starting lineup. Their bench, they've completely overhauled with Kirilenko and everybody else that they've ended up bringing in as well. Chicago's bringing back Derrick Rose after he missed an entire year. They've got new bench players like Mike Dunleavy to put into the mix as well. So every one of those teams that you mentioned has made more changes, especially to starters, than the Pacers have this year. You're right that the Pacers had a bench overhaul, and you got to implement Scola and Watson and to a much lesser extent Copeland, Solomon Hill, guys like that. But the 5 starters, you knew what you had coming in here. And those guys know how to play with each other. They know each other's tendencies. I'm not a big chemistry guy, but if there is such thing as chemistry, then they have some chemistry in between them. And you've also got a guy, I don't want to underrate the fact, you got Frank Vogel, who's back for a 4th year with this group. You know, Brooklyn's got a first-year head coach, brand-new guy, Jason Kidd. So a lot of changes with those other teams that you mentioned there that the Pacers have avoided. There was a lot of continuity with this team over the last couple of years, and I think they've played it to their advantage to this early start. But I do think Brooklyn's going to get better. Chicago's obviously going to get better, and I think we saw a glimpse of that on Saturday. New Orleans is a very young team. They'll be better by the end of the year. Memphis won't be this bad moving forward here. So a lot of those teams you mentioned, I think, are going to get a lot better.
And that's why I want to flip the script on you and ask what the continuity with the starters the Pacers have had. It seems like they do have a leg up on a lot of those teams that they've played. And then you look at some of the squads they're going to play. For instance, Minnesota's a team that's getting a lot of attention. In the Western Conference, people are touting them as a sleeper. They've got San Antonio at the beginning of next month. Do you think, A, that there are teams in the East besides the Pacers and the Heat who are going to get a lot better? And B, is there going to be a problem for Indiana as they seem closer to their ceiling than a lot of these other teams who they're playing? It seems like they started off really well as a result of that continuity with the starters. But it seems like there are these other teams with a lot of room for growth.
Well, the answer to that question would be that, yeah, the Pacers might be closer to their ceiling than those other teams, but the Pacers' ceiling is number one in the East. You know, what's Brooklyn's ceiling? What's New Orleans' ceiling? What's Detroit's ceiling? It's, I think, substantially lower than that for all those teams, and East or West. So I
feel bad that we're talking about New Orleans and Detroit, by the way, in the same sentence as the Indiana Pacers. So I want to take a back step on that.
They're a game away from the finals. Maybe they're a game away from winning its championship last year. So, you know, of course the Pacers are close to where their ceiling is because they were a game away from what anybody's ceiling is at the end of the day. The only other team that I'm worried about in the East that I would be worried about as a Pacers fan is Chicago. I really do think it's a three-team race. I think Brooklyn will get better. I just don't think that they'll get that much better. They have a lot of Robins and no Batman. Yeah. And Darren Williams, I think we just have to accept the fact that he sort of is who he is at this point. I don't think Kevin Garnett has anything left in the tank. I still think they can squeeze something out of Paul Pierce. But it's a little bit of a hodgepodge of a lineup. They have a lot of names, but you know, is Joe Johnson going to take over for you? Is he going to be an MVP candidate? Is Brook Lopez going to be a franchise NBA perennial all-star center? I'm not ready to go there with those guys. And I guess the Knicks are the only team that are even in the conversation, maybe because they finished number two last year, but they're just a mess right now. There's a lot of infighting. And any team with Carmelo Anthony, it's hard to really take seriously outside of the regular season. So I think you're talking about three teams in the East. The West is where it gets tough because I think you have four or five really good teams in the West. And the Clippers are trying to reach that level, and maybe because they have Doc Rivers, they can finally maximize the talent that they have. You know, Golden State is going to be a really good team. San Antonio, we want to ride off every single year, and they're always great. I think Houston will start to figure things out, and they just have too much talent to not be there in the end as well. And I don't think I'm missing anybody, but that's kind of the grouping of teams. And I think there's a little bit of a drop off actually between the top five or six in the NBA, East and West, and the rest of the grouping. And I think the Pacers are on that first tier pretty clearly just because of the way that they defend and because they have a superstar now in Paul George. And we know that you need that in today's NBA. It's just life. You have to have that number one guy. And for a while there, we were wondering, is he a Robin or is he a Batman? Not to use that stupid, tired analogy again. He's proven himself, I think, to be a Batman. Especially if he's going to score 24 points, 25 points a game, then I guess we should get ready for that new expectation level to jump up a couple of notches.
Yeah, Derek, if he's going to score that and be an elite defender and grab boards and dish out assists, he's not Batman. He's moved to a superhero with actual powers. I think that's fair to say, like beyond that entire tier to another group of guys. It's interesting. You talked about the West swing, and I want to get you out of here pretty soon, but Indiana's going to have a chance to see very quickly how they match up against that West tier because they've got Los Angeles on December 1st, the good Los Angeles. They've got San Antonio on the 7th. And they play the Thunder the second night of a back-to-back right after the Spurs. So that's going to be a pretty brutal stretch on that five-game road trip. I'm going to disagree with you on one point you said earlier, the difference between the Nets and the Knicks. I just don't think the Knicks match up well. I think that's where the Nets are a little scarier, just because they have Darren Williams against George Hill, even if he's not going to be a big-time franchise guy. I still think they've got an advantage there. And they beat Indiana 2-1 in the series last year, and it was just the matchups. There are problems with them that I see. That looks like a group that will be a tough. I see them as more a tough second-round matchup for the Pacers if they nurse their old guys through the season and get Garnett giving them 20 minutes and Pierce giving them 25, Kirilenko off the bench. They seem to have more to me than the Knicks. Maybe I'm sure you disagree based on what you said before, but I just don't see it with New York.
No, not at all. No, I think Brooklyn is a better team than the Knicks. I said the only other team that might be in the conversation is New York, and then immediately wrote them off because of... I mean, you've got a team with J.R. Smith, Kenyon Martin, and Metta World Peace.
And don't forget Chris Smith. They have Chris Smith, J.R.'s brother. Yeah, no question.
It's waiting to explode. And I will say that, you know, superpowers or not, if you want to put Superman up against Batman, I'll take that fight any day of the week. I think Batman would beat the crap. Superman is super soft, and the outfit is really lame, and he doesn't have a utility belt.
Or
Kevlar or spikes or, you know, grappling guns or anything like that. So, but to get back to the point at hand, the five-game, I think it's a five-game Western swing. Is it not in early December? They've got those three games you mentioned in the 2 months.
Five-game Western.
They go to Portland.
Yeah, it's Los Angeles, Portland, Utah, San Antonio, and Oklahoma City.
Yeah, Utah's the other one. Okay, Utah's the other one. But you're facing... Without Houston, you're facing the three top teams. So three of the top four teams in the West on that trip. And I think that'll tell us a whole heck of a lot about them moving forward. But then again, you know, I think you look this week and they go to New York. They were 1-4 in the Garden last year. They go to Boston. That's the better team that we thought, a Boston team that beat Miami on that home court a couple of weeks ago. So I think that this is going to be a challenge. And then you come back home and you face Philly, who's way better than anybody thought they were going to be. So I think this is an interesting stretch too. It goes back to our earlier point in this conversation, Pierce. It's a long season. It's 82 games, and you feel like you want to make statements about a team, and it's not even Thanksgiving yet. It's tough to say. I think the Pacers are really good. I thought going into the season they were really good. Nothing that they've done so far has changed my mind, either in a positive or negative way, and that's not a bad thing. In fact, that's a good thing. We want teams to be what we expect them to be. Good surprises are nice, but bad surprises suck. And so far, I haven't been surprised at all, and the Pacers have been really good. And this is exactly the level that, ideally, I wanted them to play at. And if they play this way, like they've played through the first 10 games, and if the individual pieces, Kimber continues to defend the way that he has, George Hill's able to stay healthy. David West is able to find some more offense. Lance Stephenson plays at this level. Paul George continues to score at this level. The bench contributes as much as they have so far, most notably Scola, who's been terrific at Watson. Then they're going to be absolutely fine, and they're going to be able to reach all of the goals, or at least get really close to all the goals that Pacers fans set out for them going into this season.
Yeah, there's a lot to get excited about. Derek, I've kept you longer than I intended to. Well, I'll have to have you back again, and maybe we'll just talk DC versus Marvel, an entire podcast devoted to that. Let's do that.
Yeah, you make sure you bar up your window tonight in your apartment because, you know, you never know what's going to happen. Batman might come through and beat the crap out of you for what you said about him earlier.
Sorry, Batman. My bad. Good place.
I get a grappling gun in the eyeball.
Oh, no. No, okay, that's a story for off air, I guess. We'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that, Derek. I'll ask you if you have anything to plug before we send you on your merry way.
No, just, the show's 3-7. If you're in the Indy area, we'd love for you to give it a listen. It's 1260 AM, or if you're more tech savvy, it's on the iHeartRadio app. Also, on Twitter, which I'm just obsessed with, @Schultz, S-C-H-U-L-T-Z, 1260. Also, with Indy Star, I'm doing occasional... I guess they call them webisodes before Pacers games. Our next one, I don't think, is until before the Miami game in December, but those are going to happen once or twice every week. It's me and Lara Overton, who MCs the games, and Candace Buckner, who's the new Pacers beat writer for the Star, and it's a lot of fun. And keep your eye out on those on the Indy Star Sports website.
Yeah, we've already had you and Candace on. We just need Lara. Maybe we'll get her in studio. I feel like that'd be fun.
Yeah, she's a lot easier on the eyes in studio than I am. So
I'm
smart to book me via phone and then maybe have her in person.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if we can get that work done. Derek, thanks again for coming on. All the best, and want to have you on again.
Yeah, thanks, Pierce. Love Indy Cornrows. Thank you.
Rock and roll. All right, that'll do it. Until next time, folks, for Derek Schultz, Pierce Cavanaugh saying so long, travel well. We'll have another episode up later this week. Until next time, thanks for listening.